Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Happy Hump Day. I thought it would be a good idea. We've touched on this subject many times before on our healthy show on Wednesdays. Every time I turn around, there's new news about this particular subject, autism. Autism has so many variables and so many points of view. If you look up on, if you Google anything from the big clinics that study autism, every time you turn around, there's a new set of initials for something that is derived from autism. And lots of schools of thought about why autism exists from birth time to legacy or heredity to lifestyle. What mom's eating, what a child is eating, all these different things seem to play into it, much like the much older issues like Alzheimer's. So let's bring in the ladies. Shelley's first on my dashboard. Good morning, honey. How are you?
I'm doing good. Hope you are too. Good morning, everyone. Good morning to our listeners.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm good. Of course, it's like Hades here in South Florida right now. I keep looking around for the devil to sprout out from behind a tree because it's hot as hell, that's for sure. So the middle of the afternoon, if you're out, I hope you're young and very vital because otherwise it knocks you right on your keister. It's so, so hot. But some issues have come up of late with people in my life that have been given new diagnosis for this very, challenging issue, called autism, Asperger's, ADHD, ODD, I always laugh when I think of all these things because, they have to be bad if you can never say them without just using initials. So let's bring in Monica because she may even have some tricks up her sleeve in regard to Swift Naturals. And, of course, she talks to us a lot about what is better for us to eat. But I don't know if autism is, I think it can be made worse or better by your lifestyle, for sure. But I read a lot of things about, heredity, the amount of time that a brand new baby is in the oven, so to speak, apparently plays into this a little bit. But I have some interesting things that I want to share, and then we'll discuss it at length. Good morning, Miss Monica.
Good morning, Renee. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine. I guess you guys are
too. That's good. Yeah, we're not too bad, like I just said, I keep waiting for the devil to come out behind a tree because it's hot as hell here in South Florida. That is for sure. So, but this, just recently, we were given another diagnosis, from somebody close to me. And the diagnosis was ODD. And I'm like, well, that's odd, right? And of course, one of my sons said that I was like, what's ODD? And my son said, I think it's odd, Mom. And so I researched it and I'm like, it's oppositional defiant disorder. Now, I know a lot of little kids that have got that. I know a lot of men that have got that. To be fair, I know a few women that have it as well. But now it's actually a named not disease, but challenge, I guess. So between autism, Asperger's, ADHD, ODD, all of these different things, they all seem to be in the same handbasket. And many of the things that come with it, of course, is inability to get the attention of the child or the usually you start dealing with it when they're pretty young. We have a family that comes to some of the functions, and I've talked about them before, and they have two children that struggle greatly with attention deficit. I mean, you know, short of holding their face and doing eye contact, you literally could scream until, you know, midnight and not get their attention. So let me say that all of these have a different definition, but they all fall into the fact that social interactions and behavioral issues are at the crux of all of them, all of them. So who would like to put in their 50 cents for it to begin with?
Well, I think that any time you're talking about these type of diagnoses, one of the things I want to mention is that the Western medical establishment is the only medical establishment that gives diagnoses or titles to diagnoses based on symptoms. So when you listen to the litany of commercials for medications on the television, you know, say, oh, I just found out that I have this or I have that, and they make it sound like it's a condition instead of a symptom that is being produced by lifestyle or whatever, or as a reaction to other medication. So saying that somebody has, you know, oppositional defiant disorder, as it makes it sound like it's a permanent condition that they can't move away from. And although there are some
over here,
like
Nathan.
That, there are diseases, there are conditions, there are infections that you can label. But when you come down to behavior, a lot of behavior is based on physiological health, brain health, social circumstances. So it's not really a disorder, but the medical establishment starts putting labels on things. And when they do that, I think it tends to lead people into the wrong area about how they would treat that. So if somebody's diagnosed with ODD, okay, well, what pill do I give them? Instead of looking at lifestyle, looking at environment, looking at things that may be stimulating that behavior or looking at their diet, because we've all talked about how many types of foods can make us angry or sad or lethargic or hyper or whatever. And a lot of times there's been so many studies with children with ADD, ADHD, and even autism that show that particular foods will improve their behavior, and different foods will aggravate and exaggerate their behavior. One of the things Monica talks about all the time with brain health is dehydration. Well, proper hydration for somebody that's been diagnosed with any of the autism spectrums is crucial. So any diet that promotes brain health is going to help somebody that has been diagnosed with any level of the autism spectrum. Having a cleaner diet, get soda out of the diet, make sure they're hydrating properly, make sure they're not eating a bunch of foods with high levels of sugars and artificial sweeteners and artificial colorings and preservatives and all these things that really mess with normal brain function. So because I personally know two people who have been diagnosed, one with Asperger's and the other one with a different level of the autism spectrum, and they are extremely high functioning. They're very caring, they're very intelligent, but they also have impeccable diets. Both these individuals, one is a vegetarian, one is not a vegetarian, but they both eat clean foods. drink a lot of water. So they're really in, they're very health conscious, and because of that, it assists their brains in functioning at a higher level. And so if you taught them, you would not realize that they have this autistic spectrum. But so it, it definitely has to do with lifestyle and, you know, and based on food and healthy remedies.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't disagree with any of that. And I do also know some adults who have I maybe control these issues in themselves, but I certainly have come across adults in my life, in my position as a coworker, in my position as a manager, whatever the case might be, or in my position as a friend. So, you know, sometimes somebody will say something to you and like, where the hell did that come from? Even grown-ups will say something to me, and I think to myself, are you serious? But one of them, now that has a name, this ODD, explains a lot. You know how you grew up and there was always a friend that could make a mountain out of a molehill, literally, or a family member that everything was like drama. I mean, you know, the rest of us would be saying, oh, that's too bad, and work through it and kind of literally let it roll off your back. And then you have the one that's walking around with their arms flailing all over the place, screaming and ranting and raving over something that you can't do anything about. And altercations. How many times in your life have you said something that was important to say to someone else? Say your partner. Say your partner. Say you say to your partner, I can't do this anymore. You're going to have to help me with this. And mm-hmm. they go off on you like you've just asked them to, you know, donate their right leg. And you wonder, where did that come from? Because it's not there all the time, right? But all of a sudden you'll see that side of somebody and think to yourself, what, aren't you kind of overreacting to this? Well, this apparently is this key. And the more I realized that I indeed have met many people who suffer with this particular thing, how one day it's okay to say that the sky is blue, and on the next day it's not okay to say it. And I'm sure we've all met people like that. So I don't know whether this particular diagnosis, oppositional defiant disorder, don't we all know somebody who's on occasion oppositional and defiant? I mean, so I don't understand how we can actually put a label on that one. And attention, another one.
They put a label on it so that they can give you a pill.
Right.
There is no there is no label needed with any of those things. All the alphabet soup of that. It all, however they got it, which I believe vaccines have a lot to do with it. But however they got it,
believe that.
What?
Much believe that.
Yeah, we
I think we all
that.
Pretty much believe that.
Okay. So, say they, you know, it's a true statement. They all got it from vaccines. Too many at one time. Not spaced out far enough. That type of thing. So they grow up and they got this alphabet soup that's been, you know, put on their head from a doctor that has. That has no idea, got, I think, 15 hours of nutrition classes when he was in medical school. So he has no idea that nutrition is tantamount to these diseases. For ODD, or whatever you're saying, oppositional defiant disorder. Okay. It's diet. It's all about diet. serotonin, the happy hormone, is made in your gut, then goes to your brain and does a whole bunch of other stuff, you know, with all the other hormones. But serotonin is what they need, the happy hormone. And they don't have it because they're eating crap. Okay? And a parent, and I get it, a parent, you know, they got a few kids, maybe they got a baby, they're working a full-time job, they have a husband working a full-time job, the husband comes home, wants dinner, blah, 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 and they got this kid throwing a tantrum in the middle of the kitchen floor, you know. So, you know, they're all frazzled. They don't know what to do. And they're just throwing corn dogs in the microwave for their kids to eat. Well, hello, that's why, you know, it's hard nowadays. I guess it was hard when I did it too. But people need to make full, good food choices, full meals, real cooking, you know, that type of thing. My cousin's son, when I first got into all of this, I was doing a lot of research. And because my cousin's son has autism and he is very low functioning, or he was, very low functioning, one of my best experiments was talking my cousin's wife into changing his diet, because they would, you know, feed him whatever he wanted. You know, they were just happy for him to eat. You know, so
that is an issue. That's a big issue.
Yeah.
I agree.
And because they also have an aversion to certain textures of food or taste or sour, sweet, you know, so you just have to keep working at it. But it took me a year to talk her into changing his diet and going into a paleo, keto type thing, you know. And he was very low functioning, 18 years old, still in diapers, couldn't take a bath himself, couldn't shower, did not talk.
Well, was there some retardation there? I mean,
no.
You know, literally.
He was totally autistic.
Really? Wow.
Just very low functioning. He
wow.
couldn't do anything. She had to dress him, everything. So I said, please just try this. Just, you know, make him eat these things, bone broth, grass-fed meats, organic vegetables, cabbage, all these things that I told her about. And it was like, at first he refused, but that's all they gave him. You know, they took out all the junk in the house. And it, I guess after about 2 or 3 weeks, she called me and she said they were sitting down to breakfast and you know, he was eating eggs, you know, pastured eggs, sitting down to breakfast, and for the first time in his whole life, he actually looked up at them, looked them in the eyes, and acted like he knew who they were, whereas before there was no eye contact. There was spinning, there was, you know, the hand movements and all this. And
right.
It was not a small child. This was a man, you know. And, yeah, so, and then day by day there was more improvements. And he even said the word mom, you know, that type of thing. So, yeah, it's all about diet, all about it. Once the vaccine get into your body.
Is this young man functioning now, Monica? Is he functioning now?
Yes, he can. He is potty trained. He can go to the bathroom by himself. He showers by himself now. He changes his own clothes. Yeah.
That's
a huge difference.
Wow.
Yeah, when they change his food.
Yeah. Well, you know, Dr. Amen in the book that I'm always talking about on here because I'm just so impressed with it, but the Change Your Brain, Change Your Life book by Dr. Amen, he actually spends an entire chapter on obsessiveness. ODD is one of the disorders he discussed. So this is in chapter 12 where he looks into worry and obsessiveness, and it's all related to the ACG part of the brain, which is called the anterior cingulate gyrus. So that's why they just call it ECG. And when that gets stuck, and there's a lot of reasons it can get stuck, that's when a person's behavior becomes fixed and obsessive. So he, at the end of chapter 12, he actually spends 3 pages talking about ODD and some case studies where his methods helped these, some of them were children, one of them was an adult, where he helped these children and the one adult actually break free from this, from the momentum. So a lot of people that hear you have ODD, they're like, they think it's a lifelong, a lifelong malady, that they're always going to have ODD. So their doctor or their psychiatrist is going, now that they've got that diagnosis, they're going to have to go on prescription medication to control for the rest of their life. Where in his case, he shows how diet, he actually, in the beginning of chapter 13, he talks about the nutritional interventions and exercise that are very effective at reducing the stuckness of the ACG, of reducing that obsessive. He also talks about psychological interventions where somebody that's more higher functioning, you can teach them how to get unstuck from their thoughts and things like that. But he definitely talks about diet and exercise. Exercise releases certain hormones that help balance the brain. So in that book, chapters 12 and 13, he goes through a lot of information about ODD, and he says a lot of the same things we're talking about here, is that one of his criticisms of his own field, because he is a psychiatrist, is that once they put a label on something, it makes people think that it's not something they can correct or they can improve or something
right.
like that without a prescription med. He does mention a couple drugs that in the beginning may be helpful in at least getting the person to be receptive, but ultimately he likes using diet and lifestyle as more of a permanent solution and trying to wean back off on the pharmaceuticals over time. He's not a big advocate of that because he saw over his years in practice when he first got started and prescribe medications the way he was taught to, he saw how a lot of times it would actually increase the symptoms within his patients. And that's really what led him on the journey he went on as a psychiatrist in trying to find better ways to serve his patients. And that's where he found this fourfold approach of dealing with spirituality, psychology, physiology, and nutrition included with pharmaceuticals. So.
Well, like, I mean, we've talked about this a lot of times about behavioral issues. And I mean, I think everybody today wraps their brain around sugar. I think if you look at somebody comes to me and says, you know, I can't get them to calm down. I can't get them to sit still. And I'm like, how much sugar are you giving them? That's the first thing I say. And they say, you know, they say, well, you know, we really don't give them sugar. And maybe they're here for an hour and, you know, all they're giving them is an icicle popsicle, which is sugar water with
right.
food coloring in it. Or
right.
Or they're giving them, you know, jelly, jarred jelly. Read it. A minuscule piece of fruit and a whole bunch of simple syrup, which is sugar and water. So, you know, I mean, all of this kind of stuff, I think most of us get that sugar has something to do with behavior. Alcohol is sugar. And look what that does to a lot of the grown-ups in our lives. So I think that part of it is a big deal. But the other thing that I want to touch on, and I think, again, this filters down to, you know, what we're giving them nutrition from, and that's attention span. If you're given a sermon to a four-year-old, they stop listening to you after about the first 60 seconds. And if you don't have contact with them, if you're not touching them, if you're not getting eye contact with them, I promise you, they're not hearing a damn thing you're saying. And I know some grown-ups like that as well. So I think we all do. Right? But all of those things make a difference. I've mentioned before the man that came to Hippocrates years ago who was a teacher and a doctor, and he concentrated on autism. And he said, because he and his wife had children, and all three of them were on the spectrum. They weren't, they were productive, but they still had issues. And he said attention span was the worst. And he said, look how they are when you put a phone in their hands. I mean, I'm seeing this all the time now. I see babies in grocery carts with an iPad, one of those really sturdy iPads, and they are mesmerized by what's on that screen. That screen has their attention you seldom get when you're talking to them. I mean, I don't know. Maybe if we painted ourselves different colors and jumped up and down, maybe we could get them to pay attention to us. I don't know. I'm a little old to be up for something like that. But I've tried other things. I've tried holding their faces and having them look at my eyes and talking to them. And if you do that with a child, especially like a 2 or 3-year-old, try that with one. Monica, you've got some in your life now, every now and then. Shell, you've had some in your life, won't be long probably, and you'll have some more. If you try to do eye contact with a child that has attention deficit, they can't look at your eyes. They'll look every place but your eyes.
Yeah.
They cannot focus on just looking at you. They just cannot. So this is an issue. And then it trickles down to, okay, what did you feed them this morning? Well, they had Lucky Charms. Lucky Charms. 75% sugar and maybe a little bit of oat is in there. I don't know. Or rice or something along those lines. But, I mean, and these are what's acceptable. I mean, I talk to some families that don't even make breakfast for their kids before they go to school. They're allowed to take whatever they want out of the refrigerator or out of the cupboard or, you know. I have teenagers who would rather eat oodles of noodles than a home-cooked meal.
Wow.
You know, seriously.
The nutrition or the lack of nutrition in this country is why we have dropped so far down on the natural the World Health Organization, you know, where they go in and they look at the health of different countries. The United States used to be like at the top one or two, and now we've dropped to like 40 or something like that in the world. And I don't know how many Americans even realize that. So why did that happen? Okay, if you look at America compared to other countries, we have more foods that have non-food ingredients, that have preservatives, that have food colorings. We have more foods that are made through agribusiness, which means it's non-organic, which means it's being treated with pesticide residue and things like that. All these are toxins to our body. They're non-nutritional. On one hand, it says something about the human constitution that we haven't annihilated ourselves based on junk food, all right, and junk nutrition, that we keep rising above it. But it also says something because of the amount of unhealthy conditions people have today. Americans are sicker today than ever before in history. How can that be possible with all the advances, supposed advances in medical science and advances in cleanliness and advances in having clean water brought to your house? And, you know, we're not living in third world countries with dirty water streaming down the streets right outside of our house. you know, this is America where everybody has plumbing and electricity for the most part. You know, so why is our health declining? Why every year are there more diagnoses, more types of cancer, more types of mental illness? At some point, people have got to wake up and realize that this is environmental, meaning the air we breathe, the food that we consume, what we drink, you know, water versus soda, you know, what we think, you know, because you can become polluted by all those different things. And once you start taking an overall lifestyle approach and you do spring house cleaning of your lifestyle, and it doesn't have to be drastic, start making little changes. Start trying to not, you know, get obsessed about things that bother you, because there are very easy methods on breaking some obsessive thinking. A lot of kids that have autism, they used to think that autism was caused by the parents not giving kids enough attention. But they've done, Dr. Amon talks about that in the book, but they've done dozens of studies with that, and they've proved that that has nothing to do with it. Autism is biological, which means it's a shift in the brain chemistry. It's a shift in the hormones that affect the brain, things like that. And that's why he stresses, you know, using lifestyle to improve these. Once the damage is done with the brain, sometimes it can't be reversed, you know, completely, but it certainly can be reduced to the point where the person is functioning without really being affected by that diagnosis, whether it's ODD or autism or whatever.
Well, I think some of the articles that I looked at and read, the Mayo Clinic, and they have a couple books that's out, but basically everything that I found, everything I went with, they talked about the fact that children that have, well, now they're calling it ASD. All these initials are driving me nuts. This is autism spectrum disorder. But, I mean, you know, they keep throwing other initials at it, and it gets kind of confusing. But autism in and of itself, there are some theories that it has something to do with when they're in mom's belly, what mom eats. I don't want to lay that on moms, but that certainly makes sense because you are the nutrition for your baby that is growing inside of you. But kids that are born on the autism spectrum also have medical issues, many of them. And there's a whole bunch, abdominal pain, constipation, diarrhea, things like that, and often are difficult to potty train, and that could be one of the reasons, because they don't get an alert like they should and have accidents. They talk a lot about eating processed foods. I mean, I think everything that you pick up today, every time I'm in the store, just for the hell of it, and some of it I still buy anyway because, you know, I do, because I have a limited amount of money to spend. I buy a lot of fruits and vegetables. I buy a lot of stuff like that. We eat a lot of salads, but we also eat, you know, turkey. Turkey's really not good for you. It really isn't good for you. But everybody
what
loves
is it?
Turkey. I mean,
turkey. Why isn't turkey good for you?
Well, because if you have a turkey that you're raising and you're feeding grain to and all that kind of stuff, and then you prepare it and have it ready for you, that's one thing. But that's not what we do. We buy a frozen butterball at the store, and it's got all kinds of stuff in it, all kinds of stuff in it. It's been put, extra liquid has been put into it. There's butter fat on the inside of it, or lard on the inside of it to make juices. Yeah, what is the, Brian used to talk about turkey all the time. Tryptophan? Is it tryptophan that's in turkey, Shelley?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, it's really, really, and if you've got a good constitution, you can probably eat turkey. But if you're one of these kids that we're talking about, you probably shouldn't be eating turkey, and you probably shouldn't be eating a lot of the other stuff that we eat. And but again, when you're in the womb and mom eats bad stuff, or mom smokes, or mom has this, I mean, a lot of crap to lay on a mom, I get that, but that has something to do with it too. And it is difficult to decide what's best because there's so many different schools of thought. And the time at Hippocrates, I would have people come in, really, really smart people who done their, you know, who had done their own studying and really understood a lot more about health than I ever will. And their school of thought was different. I mean, there's people that argue with Brian about I had a discussion yesterday with somebody about the difference between veganism and raw foodist and vegetarian. And I said, they're all different. They're not the same thing. They're all different.
Right.
They all have different reasons for doing the things we're doing. What about the people that are doing the bone broth now? I mean, you know, it came out and everybody's talking about it. I've got a lot of people that are, you know, pretty strict about their diet. Now they're doing bone broth. But we're getting off the subject, and I think it's a big, big subject. But what I really wanted to talk about is how to help some of these people. So what I'm hearing from both of you is pretty much the way I think too. I think that would you both be in agreement that an autistic child should not have refined sugar?
Period. Oh, yeah, shouldn't have corn syrup, shouldn't have anything that has artificial sweeteners in it, definitely should not have any soda, because soda really messes with the body chemistry and with brain health. A lot of neurological experts that are knowledgeable about diet, Dr. Amen being one of them, says that soda is one of the worst foods that you can give any child that has any attention disorder. And most children will crave it, and that's why the parents want to give them the soda, because it calms them down, but that benefit is short-lived because then it ends up messing with them more. So, yeah, the nutritional integrity is very, very important. And then a lot of things we talk about on the show, anything that helps the brain function, like giving a child that has any part of the autism spectrum, things like blue-green algae, some of making sure that they have good omega fats in their diet, things like that. Anything you do that supports brain health is going to help that child.
Mm-hmm. Well, most of the articles that I read even goes on to say that, you know, you have a child, and unlike the wonderful story that Monica shared with us of a successful endeavor to turn somebody around like that. I mean, that should be, you should write that, honey, and share it on one of your sites, because that gives a lot of people hope for something that otherwise doesn't give a lot. The fact that you were able to help these people turn a story like that around. I've met many elderly people older than me, which is up there, who raised children their whole life, and still some of them are in their 80s and they're still taking care of a 60-year-old who is still kicking but is non-functioning. And it breaks your heart, you know, it breaks your heart. So, but I think that as that child grows up, the likelihood of them having a good diet is pretty slim, because according to everything I read, you know, they're selective eaters. They only want the sweet stuff. They only want the things that they want. And many times they won't eat unless they have something. So if you're the caregiver, your choices are letting them starve to death or letting them have some sugar. So, it's a tough place to be.
I got something about that. It's on Netflix. It's a movie. It's a documentary about several people who they followed who had all kinds of ailments. And one of them was a family that had an autistic daughter. The kid was like 5 years old, something like that, non-functioning in every way, spins just like my cousin's son. And the camera, a nutritionist came in and said, empty out your cupboards, empty out your refrigerator, get rid of everything that is bad for this kid, for your whole family, and replace it with organic fruits, organic vegetables, grass-fed meats in, small amounts. It's always the smallest portion on your plate, everything like that. Mm-hmm. No chips, no Cheetos, sodas, nothing. And they cooked it, the food, put it in front of the little girl. She refused to eat it because all she would eat was Doritos and chicken nuggets. And mm-hmm. And it didn't look like, the food in front of her did not look like anything she wanted to eat. So she went 5 days without eating. And
wow.
And if the camera follows their life and follows the parents, and by the fifth day, these parents looked like they were done. They were exhausted fighting with this little girl, because an autistic kid like that, they're just going to scream their heads off because they're hungry.
Yep.
And they don't understand
yep.
why they
yep.
cannot have what mm-hmm. they've been eating for the last 5 years, but
mm-hmm.
the parents stuck
mm-hmm.
with it. And by the fifth day, she picked up, the green bean that they provided there on the plate, and she started eating it. And then it
wow.
was like a switch went off.
Uh-huh.
Fasting is sometimes, it's always medically necessary. I don't know medically is the word, but fasting is a thing. It gives
mm-hmm.
your body a chance to
yep.
reset itself.
Cleanse.
And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
And it took 5
mm-hmm.
days for this little girl to reset herself that she was willing to eat what was on the plate. And then it shows her like 6 months later in the same thing that happened with my cousin. She wasn't spinning anymore. She was starting to talk.
Right.
I mean,
right.
The kid is not going to starve. You are not going to starve a kid, if you have, but you are going to go out of your mind, because of the
right.
screaming, the yelling, the frustration.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I think
mm-hmm.
that's a great story. And I think the parental persistence there is what it means to be a parent. And so many parents won't go through the couple of days of distress and discord with their child, or they don't want they want to be friends with their children instead of parent-child. They want to have a friend relationship with their children, so they
exactly.
don't want the children mad at them or angry, So they do things to reduce conflict, but what they're doing is they're trading off a couple of days of really hardcore resistance for years of more constant problems, health problems, mm-hmm. emotional problems, behavioral problems. I had a friend of mine who's a little girl. She was 4, I guess, at the time, and she loved cheese, and she was constantly getting ear infections. She had to go to the ear doctor and get her ears drained, and then they would put these little tubes in, and the whole procedure was very painful and all that. I told her, I said, if you just take dairy products out of her diet, she's probably lactose intolerant, And I said, why don't you ask the doctor? So the doctor even said, yeah, that may help, which I was shocked, because a lot of times the doctors don't. But the doctor actually agreed with me and said, yeah, maybe you just need to take her off dairy products for a while. And she said, oh, no, I can't do that. If she doesn't have her cheese, she'll just throw herself on the floor and start screaming. So I told her, I said, well, you know, there's a lot of other cheeses out there. There's cheeses made from soy milk and almond milk and coconut milk. I said, just buy her a different brand. She's 3 years old. She doesn't know that it says it's made out of coconut milk on there, you know. And she would not do it because she was afraid that if the little girl tasted it and it didn't taste right, that she would throw a temper tantrum. So every 6 months, I knew her for like a year and a half, and three times in that 6 months, she had to take that little girl in and have food put in her ear because she wouldn't tolerate a couple of days of her screaming that she couldn't have her cheese.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, there for a while, that was like common to have tubes put in little kids' ears. I was always like, oh, my God, that sounds horrible to me. But, yeah, I knew a lot of people who did that because that was the fix for chronic ear infections and things like that. But I do think when you're talking about that kind of an issue, that's another really deep conversation that you have with a parent or an individual, whether they're the parent or not, to take responsibility of something like that, because none of us, we all want to baby the babies, and we all want to do what, you know, ensures their love and admiration for us. It's a tough road. It's a very, very, very tough road, and I think you have to get here before you can get there, if you know what I mean. You have to be older. You have to be wiser. I look at 16-year-olds that have a baby, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know. there's some in our life right now that are not family, but now they're, you know, they're like 4 and or maybe 5 and 3 and just under a year. And they're here a lot, and I'm like, what did they eat? Well, Cheerios once in a while, and I'm like, they all have teeth now. Why aren't they eating? The grandma, the mom's out of the picture, so they're being taken care of by babysitters and grandma and grandpa, and great aunt Tilly and whoever else is available because everybody has jobs and they're doing a hell of a job. I don't want to take that away from them, but I'm like, these children have to get some nutrition. I'm not just talking about food. I'm talking about nutrition.
Nutrition,
you know. It's not okay for them to not have food.
Go ahead.
The autistic child in our life, he only eats. I mean, and he'll throw a fit, like much like the story that Monica was telling about this young man. I mean, he's still not totally potty trained. He's 5 years old. He's still not totally potty trained. He has temper tantrums. He has lots of stuff going on, and all of it. He comes to my house and he says, Grandma, can I have a banana? Yes. Okay, can I have a piece of candy? No. And he'll clench his fists and hold his breath. And I'm like, go ahead. You're the one that's going to have a headache from clenching your fists and holding your breath, not Grandma. And and he'll end up eating a banana, you know, but he'll fight me. And the people that are constant caregivers to him, they give up. You know, it's like choosing their battles sometimes. So my heart aches for anybody that's going through that. And the idea of this show is not to make it look like you have to do what you have to do to get to the other side. I think we all know that. We grow up knowing that if you don't put forth effort, nothing is ever realized. I mean, I don't know how old you have to be before you realize that. I guess it's different for all of us. But this is a big thing. And now, the more I researched it today, I thought, my God, this is getting bigger than cancer. And that scares the hell out of me.
Well, you know,
there's more stuff on the internet about this than there is cancer.
Yeah, well, we had experiences with this in my family before it became so, you know, so talked about. But so we're going back, where am I, 60s? I'm going back like, you know, 45 years ago. But one of my cousins was actually institutionalized in a like a child retention center because he was so out of control. I mean, he would do a lot of what we're talking about. And they found out years later, after he had been in the institution for several years, that he had food allergies. Because they, he wasn't eating a lot of the foods in the institution that he ate at home. And over time, they were like, what's wrong with this kid? He's like, fine. And they and one of the doctors was smart enough to realize that it was dietary. So they did testing on him, and they found out that he was highly, highly sensitive to some things, overreacted to food coloring, overreacted to sugar. But if they removed those things from his diet, he was completely normal. And here he was in this institution for like a year and a half or something before they realized it was just food allergies. And then my nephew, when he was a little guy, what was this, when he was like 6 or 7, because I think he was in kindergarten or first grade, he could not sit still in class. And the teacher finally told my sister, she said, you've got to take him to the doctor and find out what's wrong with him. He's like out of control in class. And he was a really good kid. I mean, he's a sweet kid, but he would just go through these fits of anger and stuff. And it was starting to scare my sister because he was never like that. And all of a sudden he started flipping. Thank God. Now, again, we're going back, you know, 30 years ago. And there weren't a lot of doctors that understood diet and behavior. And he said, I want you to put him on a clean diet. And he told my sister all the things she couldn't feed him, like no more Twinkies, no more Ho-Hos. You know, those were the things that we used to, you know, feed the kids back then. And he told my sister, he said, no more sweets. He said he can get enough sugar out of, you know, fruits and stuff like that, but no processed sugars and things like that. So my sister did put him on a clean diet. Within 2 weeks, no behavior. The teacher actually sent a note home to my sister, and it had a big smiley face on it and everything. She said, he's a new child. I love it. Right? Well, my brother-in-law thought this was all nonsense because he could not make the – he wasn't there all the time either, so he never saw – his son's, you know, like really bad behavior. And he thought this was all ridiculous. You know, kids are supposed to eat Twinkies and Ho-Hos. It was, the whole thing was annoying him, the whole clean diet thing, because my sister was actually saying, don't bring foods in the house anymore. It's not fair to have it in front of him, right? So one night, her ex-husband comes home and he brings him a Twinkie. And he gives it to him when my sister's out of the room because he was going to shove it in her face. Look, I just gave him a Twinkie and he's still fine. Well, because he had been on the clean diet for a couple of weeks, he actually almost had like an OD reaction to the Twinkie. He took 2 bites of the Twinkie, started growling at his father. His face turned purple and he went in the hallway and started banging his head until blood started coming down his forehead. Her ex-husband at the time got so freaked out. He actually started crying, apologized, like, profusely to my sister, and from then on got diet because he saw it happen right in front of him. And he kept apologizing to my sister and kept apologizing to his son. But, it, you know, sometimes it takes that. People just do not connect what we eat to how we feel and our health. And sometimes it takes an incident like that to just shove it in your face that, you know, we truly are what we eat. If you eat junk food, you're not going to have a good, healthy body.
Well, I don't, you know, that's great, also a great sharing of a successful story. And I do believe that there's probably a lot of people who have come to that through trial and error, the difference between having sugar. I mean, there are some of us that sugar doesn't give energy to, that sugar actually sedates us. So that's another issue too. If you have a child, that is a couch potato and is more than happy to just, you know, lay on the couch, and they're like 12 or 13 years old, that's not normal. That's not normal. Mm-hmm. So there's something going on with the diet there as well. So I don't want to leave that out, because I think that you have different reactions. Just like any kind of allergic reaction, it can be different in each individual. But I do think
but keep in mind that hypoglycemia damages the pancreas also. So in diabetes, you're underproducing insulin. With hypoglycemia, you're overproducing insulin. That's why a lot of people that start out with hypoglycemia and every time they have something sweet, they get tired, can eventually develop diabetes because the pancreas is so overworked, it will eventually flip and not produce insulin. So it'll go from overproducing it to underproducing it. So it's still that the sugar is bad, though.
Well, I think the whole idea of this whole subject is that people are struggling with this. This is a real, true issue, problem, challenge, all of the above for many families today. And the one family that I spoke about early on is so far they're having their third child, and the same issues are showing themselves. As the eldest, the second born. I mean, I've been with them with the two kids, and I've told this story before and said you have to hold his face and get him to, don't just scream at him when he's running away from you because he's not listening to you. You have to get his attention before you discuss anything with him, and that means eye to eye contact, and that's hard to do. Put your hands right on his face. And make it so he has to see you and hear you. And that doesn't always help either. But it is a big issue. And anything that you can do that's going to make it easier on you, I mean, that's a hell of a life. The story Monica just told, can you imagine? I mean, I raised 4 kids, a lot more than that, if the truth be known. But it's never an easy job. And I didn't have to deal with any of those things. I can't even imagine that. I can't even imagine that. I mean, my heart and my admiration goes out to the people that are living that kind of a life and thinking that that's the norm because they've done it for so long. It isn't. You can do something about it, I think. And if you research and find out what's going on and do tests yourself, Do what Nina did with her little boy. Take away the Twinkies and see if it makes a difference. What have you got to lose? Right? What have you got to lose?
Right.
But you have to try something, right? You have to try something. If you're going through, it is not normal to have a 5-year-old that won't be potty trained. It is not normal to have a 5-year-old try to hit you or hit a sibling. None of those things are normal, and maybe you become, regimented to thinking that, oh, yeah. So if you're dealing with something like that, you need to deal with it, not just exist with it, not just let it be a part of your life, because that isn't much of a life, I'm sorry to say.
Right.
And there are things that you can do. So we have 2 minutes left. What do you think the best words of wisdom? Pay attention. And address something when you know something's not right and not pretend that it is okay?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
and like we've talked 20 times on the show, you know, Google stuff. Start seeing there's so many people out there that were in the same position you are now. Start Googling and read some of the success stories. There's a lot of them out there on the internet. There's not just the medical stuff. Actually try to find stories of people that have found solutions.
Monica, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, realize that if you've got a problem like that, you have to put it in your head as an adult to do the hard work that it's going to take and the commitment to deal with the craziness that your kid is going to put you through for a few days. And then you'll see the light at the end of the tunnel. And here's another thing. Google is garbage now. You cannot find alternative remedies on Google anymore since they changed their algorithm. Go to DuckDuckGo as a search engine, and you get a lot more.
What is it called?
D U C K.
Yeah, D U C K D U C K Go G O.
DuckDuckGo
is a search engine, and you'll come up with all kinds of alternative remedies and information, and you won't see the first page WebMD.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you, ladies. Love you both. Have a great day. And like I said, stay inside where the AC is working because it's just too damn hot outside. We'll be back on Friday. God bless everybody. Thanks, girls. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. God bless.